You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood support and partnerships, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And the Radio Cafe thanks LANL Foundation for their sponsorship of this program. I'm very happy now to welcome Rachel Kahn. She's Projects Director for Amigos Bravos, which is a statewide water conservation organization. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back on the show. I think we were talking several years ago about something called the Waters of the United States, and there is now a potential threat to what was actually a pretty good rule from the perspective of clean water and water conservation. Now there's a threat that's coming from the Environmental Protection Agency that would really potentially be very hard on New Mexico's water. What's going on?
So yes, this is a big turnaround from what we were talking about a couple years ago, which was the clean water rule under the Obama administration. Now, under the Trump administration, we have a new Waters of the U.S. rule that has just been proposed. It was released on February 14th. I call it a dirty water Valentine that was delivered to us all. So this dirty water rule, I think, most seriously impacts New Mexico's waters of any place in the country. So New Mexico is most negatively impacted than any other state by this proposed dirty water rule. Unfortunately, we only have 60-day comment period on this rule, which is quickly coming to an end. The comment period ends on April 15th. So we're going around New Mexico trying to talk to people about the serious implications of this rule on our waters here in New Mexico.
Tell us a little bit about the history of this. I mean, there's the Environmental Protection Agency. There's a piece of legislation called the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act didn't get really specific about things that needed to be specific. What happened?
So the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972. It was a bipartisan piece of environmental legislation, which sounds like a crazy extinct thing these days, right?
Those were the days.
Those were the days. I mean, back then we had rivers that were literally on fire. And so the Clean Water Act was passed, and the regulations that relate to the Clean Water Act, it's a piece of federal legislation, those were passed in 1975. And since then, we have had amazing improvement in water quality across the country. And then what happened is that in 2001, there was some questions about what water should or shouldn't be covered by this federal legislation. And there were a number of Supreme Court decisions that came out of those cases that went all the way to the Supreme Court. So there's three Supreme Court decisions that relate to this question of what waters are protected by the Federal Clean Water Act. And the result of those Supreme Court decisions is that the universe of waters shrank that are protected. So those Supreme Court decisions took what was historically protected since 1972 when the Clean Water Act was passed and reduced those protections.
Tell us more about that specifically. Like, what kind of water had been protected before that lost its protection?
Again, New Mexico was very seriously impacted by this, some of the most impacted of anywhere in the country, because isolated waters were left out, were taken out of protection.
Isolated waters.
So we have Playa Lake. So in the eastern part of New Mexico, we have a lot of Playa Lakes. These are seasonal lakes that are depressions in the landscape, and some of them are quite large, but they don't flow out. They aren't connected to any water that crosses state lines. And so they aren't considered jurisdictional. They're not considered connected to traditionally navigable waters.
State lines is literally a criterion?
Yes, it has to do with interstate commerce. So the jurisdiction
goodness.
Of the federal government is tied to the Interstate Commerce Clause. So waters that you can't make a connection to interstate commerce are considered not jurisdiction, are considered isolated waters.
Which, ladies and gentlemen, I just have to say, that's insane. I mean, nature doesn't regard state boundaries.
Yes. I mean, and it's a big impact here because it's not only Playa Lakes, it's also our closed basins. So we have a lot of closed basins in the state of New Mexico. We have the Mimbres, the San Agustin. There's a lot of closed basins, and it makes up 1/5 of the land area of New Mexico. So this is a little bit off topic of today's rule, because this is just the history of what happened. And the rule today makes it a lot worse.
So we already have had 3 Supreme Court decisions that represented setbacks to United States protected waters and specifically waters in New Mexico. When you're looking at the current rule, what waters in our state are currently protected that would lose their protection under what you're calling the dirty water rule?
Yes, this proposed rule. So it takes and shaves off protection from most of our waters here in the state. I've been having conversations with folks who are looking at this at the state level and looking at impacts across the state. And it looks like only 4% of our waters will remain with Clean Water Act protections if this rule goes through.
So 96% would not be protected.
That's correct.
Give us a sense of some of that, what that water looks like, what kind of landscapes we're talking about.
So this proposed rule is proposing to get rid of protections from ephemeral and possibly intermittent waters. And that's the vast majority of our waterways, our waters that dry up for portions of the year or only flow in response to rain or snow melt. And so those waters would not be protected. In addition, it looks like waters that do flow quite frequently or even considered perennial, which are waters that flow year-round, would not be protected if there was a gap of dry space, dry riverbed between the flowing section of a river and a more traditionally navigable water, like the main stem of the Rio Grande or the Pecos. So you get a lot of waters that start to lose protections. Like, so here in Santa Fe, the Santa Fe River, the Santa Fe River Commission has estimated that they think that at least the section of the Santa Fe River from Guadalupe downstream to the wastewater treatment plant and probably lower would lose protections. And because those lose protections, some interpretations would have the upstream stretch losing protections, which would mean the whole Santa Fe River would lose Clean Water Act protections.
This is a semi-arid state, and there are other ones around us like Arizona and Texas, Colorado, Nevada. This is a problem that, I mean, it's a new federal proposed rule that would affect New Mexico, but it would also affect all these western states.
Yes, it would impact the whole country. And there's even in wet states, there would be massive impacts. But here in New Mexico, why I'm arguing that we are the most impacted of any state is, one, because we have so many of those ephemeral and intermittent waters, those smaller waterways that don't have a lot of water in them or don't run year-round. We have so many of those. So that's one reason. But that combined with the fact that we are only 1 of 3 states in the whole country that doesn't have primacy over writing our own Clean Water Act permits. So most other states have a permit program where they are implementing the Clean Water Act through the permitting program in their state. Here in New Mexico, we don't write our own permits. And so we don't have any state infrastructure in place to fill in the gaps of what is left when federal protection is taken away. So EPA will no longer be writing permits, and these waters will be left without any state infrastructure to come in and fill those gaps.
When you say permits, permits for what?
So these are permits that most big industries have, that our wastewater treatment plants have when they want to discharge into our rivers. So you have wastewater treatment plants like the Santa Fe wastewater treatment plant, the Taos wastewater treatment plant, the Albuquerque wastewater treatment plant. These facilities all have, they're called NPDES permit or NPDES permits. And they are permits that set in place the effluent limits, the limits of water quality limits for what can be discharged and what can't into our state's waters. In New Mexico, we depend on the EPA to write our NPDES permits.
What is NPDES?
NPDES is a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System.
Oh, heavens. Okay.
Yes. The shorthand is to call them Clean Water Act permits.
Right.
And they protect our surface waters from discharges of pollutants. It sets in place limits that, you know, the wastewater treatment plant can only discharge this amount of heavy metals or this amount of nutrients. So it protects the aquatic life in our rivers. It protects all the other uses of our rivers that depend on clean water, like irrigation, drinking water, wildlife habitat. So these are all uses that are protected under the Federal Clean Water Act and that are implemented through our state water quality standards. And all the permits have to be written to meet state water quality standards. But here in New Mexico, we don't, as a state, don't write those permits. EPA implements that whole program for us.
And so when there's administration change in Washington and they put environmentally unfriendly people into the Environmental Protection Agency, that means that we have no control over changes in the permitting process.
That is true. We do have, as a state, have a certification program. It's called a 401 certification of these NPDES permits so that we can have some buffer at the state level to certify or to deny certification to bad permits. And that can work both ways, you know. And so in some ways, we have a double system here in New Mexico now where we have the federal government writing the permits and the state giving a certification or denying a certification of those permits. Of course, in the previous 8 years, we've had, or the last two of the 8 years, we've had a situation where we've had an unfriendly federal government and an unfriendly state government. And so there you don't have any safeguards in place.
What happened in those 2 years?
So we saw a lot of efforts to weaken our state water quality regulations. We saw efforts to weaken mining protections that protect water quality. And so we've been working at the state level in various places, working to fight back various proposals to weaken state mining regulations, state water quality regulations. You have less emphasis on enforcement. All of those things get compounded to have very large impacts on our state waters.
What human and wildlife communities are dependent on the kinds of water we're talking about? Now, as you said, this rule, if it were to be implemented, would affect 96% of New Mexico's waters. So what does that mean for people, plants, creatures, and so on?
So at least 280,000 people in New Mexico receive drinking water from sources that rely at least on part on these ephemeral or intermittent waters that would lose protection under this rule. Those numbers were compiled by the EPA in 2006. I've requested those numbers be updated because those were prior to, I think, when we had our drinking water diversions fully online. So I think that that's a very low estimate of the amount of people in New Mexico that rely on these sources of water for drinking water. So that's a massive impact for a state such as ours that don't, you know, we have small populations. So 280,000 is a lot of people in New Mexico. And it's been estimated that 20% of New Mexico's vertebrates, wildlife, depend upon ephemeral or intermittent waters almost exclusively for their survival. And we have, you know, massive impacts on irrigation. If these waters are not protected, you can be dumping. There's nothing to stop people from dumping pollutants into these waters. And then all the downstream users are going to be impacted. We're going to be diverting water into our fields that is polluted. We're going to be feeding drinking water to our livestock that's polluted. We're going to be diverting water for our human drinking water sources that's polluted. So it has a massive potential impact to New Mexico.
And so then we're going to be eating crops and eating meat that is potentially toxic.
Yes, without these safeguards, essential safeguards in place. We should be looking at ways to improve safeguards to water resources in the state, especially as our water resources shrink in the face of climate change.
Right.
To be doing away with the majority of federal protections for our waters is just outrageous. It's ridiculous.
We talk about rules. They're different from law that's made by legislatures. How does this work? In other words, the Environmental Protection Agency just like writes its own rules and there's no real legislative component to it?
That's right. The legislative component is the Clean Water Act, right? So that's
the
federal piece of legislation, and this is an implementing rule regulation. There are requirements for public participation in that process, and unfortunately, they're doing the bare minimum the Trump administration is only allowing 60 days of public comment on this rule that impacts, you know, the whole country at a massive scale.
And in comparison, last time there was a rule change of this kind, they had, what, a 200-day comment period?
Over 200 days under the Obama administration for the Clean Water Rule. And not only that, they had a scientific advisory board that met for 2 years under the Obama administration to look at the impacts of their rule that they developed. And they had a lot of stakeholder meetings and public meetings. Under this proposed rule, there's been only one public meeting. It was held in Kansas City at the end of February, and that's the extent.
So here in New Mexico, how is this playing out? Who's in favor of this rule change? Who's opposed to it?
Well, as far as I can tell, the only people who are in favor of this rule change are big corporate polluters. You know, that this rule has a negative impact on all of us, on the ag community, on people who care about wildlife. Everyone is negatively impacted by this, except for the people who are discharging pollutants into our waters.
As it currently stands, there are rules that keep them from discharging pollutants into our waters. So let's say you've got a mining company or some other kind of company that is potentially discharging pollutants into our rivers, into our waterways. Right now, they're prohibited from doing so. If this rule changed, would they just be like, oh, good, let's dump more stuff, let's throw away? Like, what does that actually look like?
So, I mean, another perfect example is the Department of Energy. The DOE sites have lots of permits in place right now. And so what it means is that you no longer have to get a permit. You have industry like big dairy. So the CAFO, the confined animal feeding operations, which are those big lots of cows that are all crushed together and you can smell them from miles away. And those currently have to get NPDES permits, these Clean Water Act permits. But if this jurisdiction goes away, there's no longer any authority. EPA doesn't have the authority to require permits of these facilities. And as I mentioned earlier, the state doesn't have that infrastructure in place to require state permits.
Are they looking at that now? Do we have any idea?
You know, under the Richardson administration, the Environment Department had looked at setting up permitting at the state level, taking on primacy of Clean Water Act permits. And that didn't go anywhere. There was a lot of opposition, I think, mostly because the state program would require fees to run. And the NPDES permits are not fee-based.
Right. So, you know, when we start talking about permits and who's permitting and which department and infrastructure, a lot of people, you know, they might be glazing over and thinking about what are we going to do later today. But this is the stuff of incredible importance where, here's the cliche, the devil is in the details.
Yeah, I mean, and these are big details.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about, it's only 4% of our waters would be left protected. That's 96, you know, not protected here in New Mexico, of water in New Mexico, which is so precious, right? So that's massive. And then we have our wetlands. So the other thing that this rule does is it is nationwide, it's predicted that half of the wetlands across the country would no longer be protected. That percentage is much higher here in New Mexico because most of our wetlands are these smaller, more isolated wetlands that aren't connected to one of those big waterways that flow all year round. And so a lot of our headwater wetlands would lose protections, and it's those wetlands that we depend upon to provide resilience in the face of climate change. They're like the sponges of our watersheds. They soak up the snow melt in the spring and then store it. They're like mini reservoirs all throughout our headwaters, and slowly, you know, you can imagine someone slowly squeezing a sponge and water trickling out. That's what happens year round. These wetlands hold the water and slowly release them so we can get consistent cool flow in our rivers throughout the year. And consistent flow and cool flow are some of the biggest things, most important things here in New Mexico. Many people don't realize that many of our waters are impaired for temperature, aren't meeting water quality standards for temperature, which people are like, well, that doesn't sound like a pollutant. It's not like lead or E. coli. But temperature actually is one of the most critical things that impacts fish. So if waters are too warm, our fish will die. And then you have cascading impacts of that.
And lest people think that New Mexico wetlands is an oxymoron, there are a lot of wetlands in this state. And I think years ago on this show, we had a wonderful photographer named Lucian Niemeyer, who published a book called Desert Wetlands, and basically photographed these places all around the state. And besides being incredibly important ecologically and in terms of water supply and everything else, they're beautiful places.
They're stunning. They're some of our most beautiful spots. And we at Amigos Bravos, we've developed a wetland jewel program where we've identified high priority wetlands in the headwaters in the Carson and the Santa Fe National Forest. And we have a story map up on our website where you can look at these high priority wetlands. There's 10 in the Carson and there's 12 in the Santa Fe, and you can click on them. And we had a local photographer up in Taos, Jim O'Donnell. He went and visited every one of these wetlands and took photographs. And so you can see how beautiful these places are.
So what are the specific chemicals that are most dangerous that companies are dumping and that would likely increase if this rule change were to happen?
Well, I think it runs the gamut. I mean, we have our Department of Energy facilities.
What are they dumping?
So Amigos Bravos works on permits related to Los Alamos National Laboratory. And some of the pollutants of concern there go from PCBs, which is highly toxic, highly carcinogen material that is being discharged into our waters. So that's a big, big concern. And then you have heavy metals like aluminum, mercury, lead, silver. These are all heavy metal contaminants that are being discharged from many facilities across the state. And so we're talking about really toxic materials. There's gross alpha limits that are in our water quality standards. So that's radioactive, a way of measuring radioactive materials is gross alpha measurements. And so that's another example of things that wouldn't be regulated anymore if there's no longer Clean Water Act protections.
There is something surrealistic and absurd about the time that we're living in that I'm having trouble wrapping my head around, even as every single day we are bombarded with news about how essentially the government is trying to protect people who would make us unhealthy.
It is. It's every day you hear about something new. I mean, just last week, our attorneys were arguing in D.C. about a Trump administration proposal to get rid of financial assurance regulation for mine sites. I mean, this is just after we had the Gold King mine,
right?
You know, that's impacting waters in New Mexico because there wasn't adequate financial assurance in place to clean up that mine adequately when the company left. But here we are getting rid of any oversight, any rules that would help address that. And so it is. We all get fatigued, right? We get fatigued with hearing, you know, what's the next most horrible thing that's happening. And there's a disconnect between this kind of mantra of deregulation that you hear at the federal level right now and how it impacts everyday Americans.
One of the things that I've been thinking about so much in the last couple of years is the reality that, I was talking to a biologist about this once, organisms, complex organisms like humans or other mammals, for example, are complex systems that consume and excrete and regulate temperature and regulate blood pH and regulate stomach pH. And basically, a huge amount of our metabolism is devoted to regulation. And without regulation, the whole system collapses. And when I think about government as a kind of, it's a body. I mean, we use metaphors like the body politic to think about how government works, which is that we have regulatory mechanisms to keep human society flowing and functioning properly. And when you take away healthy regulation, I mean, there's unhealthy regulation, like, you know, you might have an autoimmune disorder. But when you have healthy regulation, the system operates. When you take it away, it falls apart. It's chaos. If you were a human, you'd get a fever or you wouldn't.
You get really sick.
You get really sick.
And
that's what we're looking, that's what we're doing to ourselves.
It is. We're the earth is sick in terms of, because we are not as a species regulating our interactions with the rest of life. And this is a perfect example. This dirty water rule is a perfect example of misguided or non-existent regulation.
Now, the state engineer under the Martinez administration was also a representative of the New Mexico oil and gas industry. The new engineer, John D'Antonio, was state engineer under Bill Richardson. How do you see that change of leadership affecting New Mexico's waters and this particular issue right now?
That's a really good question, because under the Martinez administration, we joined in a lawsuit opposing Obama's Clean Water Rule back in 2015, and we're still in that lawsuit right now. And so with the change of the administration now, with Governor Lujan Grisham, with a new Secretary of the Environment Department, with a new state engineer, we are hopeful that we can withdraw from that lawsuit, hopefully soon, and free the state to adequately respond to the substantial impacts that this rule would have on the state. And I think they're hamstrung by the fact that the Martinez administration joined this anti-Clean Water Rule lawsuit. So we're still, as a state, don't have that Clean Water Rule applying to our waters.
Is there an environmental justice piece of this? In other words, a lot of environmental regulation, I mean, you talk about 280,000 people being affected. That's more than 10% of New Mexico's population. Who do we know? Do we have a sense of, like, who are the people who are going to be most badly affected?
So, unfortunately, as with most environmental issues, low-income communities and communities of color will be disproportionately impacted by polluted water, will be disproportionately impacted by this rule. And, you know, due to years of neglect and apathy from policymakers at the federal, state, and local levels, low-income communities and communities of color often suffer the impacts of failing infrastructure and mismanaged environmental regulation disproportionately. So yes, it is a huge equity issue, an environmental justice issue.
So for our listeners who are listening to this show right now, what can they do? I mean, what is the way that citizens in this purported democracy can participate?
It's time to send in comments, to have a loud and resounding voice, you know, to show the Trump administration that we oppose this proposal. On the Amigos Bravos Take Action website, there's a simple email template that folks can send in. You can add your own language, or you could cut and paste from it. But it's one of those simple, you know, fill in your name and click send if you want to do something really simple and quick. I suggest doing that.
And that's amigosbravos.org/take-action.
Yes. And so that's something that everyone can do very quickly right now. The other thing is to contact our congressional delegation and let them know, to ask them to sign on to the congressional comments that are being prepared in response to this. And so ask our representatives to sign on to the House comment letter, and then there'll be a Senate comment letter. So we want to urge our representatives to do that. We also want to urge our representatives to request an extension on the comment period. So as we mentioned before, there's only 60 days, whereas with the previous rule, there was over 200. And that's just unacceptable. I was talking earlier about initial reports show that only 4% of our waters would be protected, and also up to 50% of our current permits would no longer be applicable here in New Mexico. But those are only initial numbers, because we haven't had enough time to do the proper analysis to figure out the details, to figure out how this rule will impact New Mexico. So we need more time to gather that information to demonstrate the full impact that this rule will have. So we're asking people to urge our congressional delegation to put pressure on EPA to extend the comment period. And another way that people can help with this is that groups like Amigos Bravos, groups like the Quivira Coalition, groups like the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, all of us are working, and Wild Earth Guardians, all of these groups are working on the ground to restore wetlands. And we're not looking at, you know, is this jurisdictional, is this not? We're looking at places that are important ecologically and putting our, you know, boots on the ground and doing restoration projects every summer. We have a number of volunteer opportunities where people can join us. They're really fun weekends where we get up into the high mountains and work on these incredibly ecologically important wetland systems, stopping erosion and restoring these areas. So people can do that too. You can reach out to one of those groups that I mentioned. You can contact Amigos Bravos and come join us in doing this restoration work.
Amigos Bravos is a terrific organization that's been around for a really long time. Tell us just a little bit more about other stuff that you guys are doing, working on, successes that you've had in the past.
So we have been around, we just had our 30th anniversary. We are a statewide organization that works to protect and restore the waters of New Mexico. And we do that through three main areas. One is restoring watershed health. That's where we work on policy issues and on the ground restoration work. We were very involved in river otter reintroduction in the state, and we're still working on that, doing monitoring. If you want to get involved with that, contact us. We have otter cams, we call them, river wildlife cameras, motion activated cameras out in the northern part of the state that are capturing these great photos of the otters that we've restored.
They've got to be the cutest things ever.
They are. They're so charismatic.
They're so funny.
Yeah. Very charismatic, funny, cute animals. So we work on those types of projects to restore watershed health. Then we have a holding polluters accountable area of our work where we monitor impacts from some of the larger polluters like mining companies, the Los Alamos National Laboratory, and we engage in regulatory processes, discharge permits. We sue. We have lawsuits against these Clean Water Act lawsuits, usually against these larger polluters when necessary. And so that's the second goal area. And the third goal area is we work to build community capacity to protect our watersheds. So that's where we do trainings and outreach and youth engagement to build capacity within communities across New Mexico so that people can protect their own watersheds. And we've been working at this for 30 years. We have a lot of supporters in the state, and we want to thank, we couldn't do this work without our supporters. And there's always a lot of work to be done. This issue of the Clean Water Rule has been something we've been working on since 2001. So this has been a big policy issue, again, because I mentioned how much it impacts New Mexico. And we work on the state level addressing those impacts as well as the federal and local levels. I just thought of another area that folks can do on this particular rule. The city of Santa Fe has been really great in responding to this proposed dirty water rule. The Santa Fe River Commission has drafted a letter outlining all the impacts on the Santa Fe River and in opposition to this, you know, opposing this dirty water rule. And there's a draft resolution, city resolution, in opposition to the dirty water rule that will be heard by the city council on the 27th of March, I believe. And so folks can contact your city councilors. You could show up on the 27th in support of this resolution against the dirty water rule. So that's something else that folks can do.
If this rule does go into effect, what will happen if this rule is implemented?
So if this rule goes into effect, we'll have to move quickly as a state to figure out what we can do to try to mitigate the impacts. If this rule goes into effect, we're going to be negatively impacted here in New Mexico, no matter what. It's not only the NPDES permits, the permits that are coming from wastewater treatment plants, but it's also the dredge and fill permits that will no longer be applicable in these waters. So those are permits for filling in wetlands or dumping boulders or dirt into our arroyos and into our rivers.
Oh my goodness.
And so those are 404 permits. They're administered by the Army Corps of Engineers, and those will no longer be applicable to waters that lose Clean Water Act protections. So we're going to have to scramble as a state to figure out what we can do to try to mitigate it. But there's not going to be mitigating at all. I mean, it's just too massive of an impact. That's why we need to stop this rule. We need to activate, get people to comment. Hopefully there'll be some, I know there'll be some legal challenges, and I hope that as a state, we can join those legal challenges to this horrible rule.
Rachel Kahn is Projects Director for Amigos Bravos. They're on the web at amigosbravos.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Elevating interest and opportunities in STEM, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And the Radio Cafe thanks the Lanl Foundation for their sponsorship of this show. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.